This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
You know, I've never even met Andrew in person. The one thing I've picked up on is everybody picks on the man. And so here's my take as an outsider.
He picks on everybody else.
No. See, I think he's an innocent victim of just ruthless people who harshly judge him. He just seems to me so innocent. I don't know. I need to meet him to find out. But, yeah, that's just my impression. He'll have to tell me whether I'm right or not.
That's hilarious. Wow.
I don't trust Chris's opinion on it. I mean.
This is Apologetics Live. To answer your questions, your host from Striving for Eternity Ministries, Andrew Rappaport.
Welcome to Apologetics Live. I am your lovable little fuzzball that just everybody loves, even though I guess Israel Wayne says people pick on me. I don't, Drew, you don't pick on me, do you? Well, we're going to
have, I don't recall.
Oh, hey, look, right from the beginning, look at this, and we got, yep, this is Haps, LOL, still hasn't learned how to go to apologeticslive.com so that we could see who's speaking, just Facebook user.
By the way, Andrew, speaking of picking on you and Haps, okay, Haps has a great, great dispensational premillennial teaching on Jeffrey Rice's Facebook page. I really think you should check it out.
I'm afraid. All right, send me the link.
He explains perfectly the dispensational position.
Really? Okay, so maybe we should get that up and play that. All right, so send me the link. All right, so here's what we're going to do, folks. This is the last episode of the year. I know some of you are crying. No, you're not. But we're going to take the rest of the year off, spend some time with family. And with that, we're waiting anxiously for this guy that says that Calvinism is dangerous. Second week in a row, he hasn't responded. But
you can hear the crickets in the background.
Yes, we can hear them. They're there. Actually, hold on. I could play them if you want to hear them, but because I'm sure that we have them. Let's see. Where's the crickets? Here's the crickets. There it is. There they are. Knew we had crickets somewhere. So, but what we did have, we were looking for your hardest questions that you have. Facebook user, who we think is Haps, who earlier said, we pick on you, also says this. He says, Jeffrey Rice, Andrew wants to upload the video ideas on dispensationalism at your church.
I think because he put it on Facebook, I think he tagged Jeffrey in there.
Yeah.
He's not showing up on here.
All right. Well, here's what we got. We're going to do is I'm going to share with you guys some of what I receive as voicemails and emails. We had to do a little bit of editing with it, not to change what was said, but to remove some because we don't want to air foul language. And so, but we thought you might appreciate to hear what I receive when I listen to the voicemail of Striving for Eternity. Maybe you won't appreciate it, but we also have some fun emails, and I do have some questions that I was challenged with, and so we'll start off with those. Looking for you guys to go to apologeticslive.com to join us and ask your hardest questions. As I say each week, I can answer your most difficult questions that you have about God and the Bible, and if you doubt that, just come on in. I will admit that I don't know is a perfectly good answer. Now, we are being reminded by Melissa, if Kofi ends up jumping in here tonight, happy birthday, brother. So
birthday,
it is
Kofi.
Kofi's birthday. We were giving him a little bit of a hard time because, or at least I was, because he's got his eyes on a new, you know, commentary series there, it looks like, and he wants to get it in paperback instead of Logos. And I was like, yeah, but in Logos, you could take it everywhere with you.
It doesn't take up shelf space.
It doesn't take, and since he was having to remove all his books
in his library
because he's got his daughter coming, I said, see, you don't have to move books around when you have a newborn in the house, and the advantage of it. And then, Dan Phillips said, yeah, and you got the searchability. So, but Kofi's answer was, but I like a good deal. I don't know if he was putting that out on his birthday as ideas for folks, like, hey, if you want to get me something, but...
You know, it was a lot of you who follow me on Facebook, you know that yesterday was my son Rhett's birthday. He turned 2, and just in case you're wondering what to get him, he wears a size John MacArthur study commentary. So. I'll just save it for him for one day.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, there you go. That's what size he wears. I got it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a legit email, voicemail that I got. I saw it, and when I looked it up, because you know how the you'll get the transcriptions? The transcription said, my name and number as one of you have a nice hot cup of, hot cup, but shut the ... They didn't do a good job transcribing this one. But what did we hear? Well, this is an actual voicemail that I got, I think it was this week, when I listened to the voicemails at Striving for Eternity. These are the kind of love messages I get.
My name and number is, why don't you have a nice hot cup of shut the f*** up?
So, yeah.
People get angry, man.
Now, the irony, and I was telling this to Drew, is the guy calls up, does not block his number in any way. So, I got his phone number. And, well, because I kind of have a certain type of background... it didn't take me long to not only get his phone number, but his address, his email address, his social media. And so I'm not sure. Do I toy with the idea of sending him a message? So this is a poll for those in the chat. I'm not going to go giving out his number, though. That was one thing I was thinking is, you know, give out his number, ask all of you guys to call him and say, you know, Andrew... asked us to call you from Striving Fraternity and just
Andrew,
say thank you.
Stop picking on Andrew. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Right? He's a really gentle person.
Yeah, don't pick on him. But there's some other fun things we could do. I'm curious what you guys think is the best way. Should I email him and thank him for the message with a copy of it, obviously with the beep. You know, do I, you know, go on his Facebook and thank him there, you know, and what should the response be?
I don't know. I'll give my answer, and then everyone else can give their answer.
And you'll just have to star the ones that we have so we can look at them.
Yeah. So my answer would be, just let it ride. You know, people are going to hate. They're going to say things like that, you know, especially when you have a platform talking about truth and exposing truth and things like that. People are going to act in the flesh, right? They're going to act sinfully and wickedly in those ways, and they're going to want to shut you up. And so I say, let them talk. act like it doesn't bother you. Like Melissa said here, pray for him, and then you know, move on.
Yeah, I usually do that, but you know, it. I don't know. We maybe we have some fun. I mean, it's nice to, you know, return kindness for things like this, and yeah. you know, like, look. So folks may not know this, but like, Ray Comfort was being ridiculed incessantly by Richard Dawkins. And you know what Ray Comfort's reaction was? He actually had his staff find out where Dawkins would be speaking at, get the hotels, and he'd send a fruit basket every time that Dawkins would go somewhere. He made sure there was a banana in it because Dawkins would call him the banana man. And so he would go out of his way to send a fruit basket. And Richard Dawkins actually said in front of an audience that Ray Comfort is a very difficult man to hate. And so I kind of want to be that type of person if I can. You know, I don't know if I am, but we'll see. So Melissa is saying, Drew, that she said, Drew, I will make sure to send your son some John MacArthur books on eschatology. There you go. You're going to save those for him so that he has a more biblical eschatology than dad?
I mean, I'd save it for him so he can compare it to the biblical position. But,
yeah. All right. So we got some thoughts coming in. So this unrelated to the thing, but Jim says, Andrew, tried to reach you. I don't know how you tried to reach me. It's pretty easy to reach me, by the way, just info@strivingforeternity.com. I'll put that up in a moment. But he says, Andrew, tried to reach you. Your podcast with Doreen Virtue at the 6-minute, 30 minutes is she calls God a she. Please go back and listen. I'll listen, but I'm going to assume... And I'm going to let me put up the way you could contact us. There you go. If you want to contact us, it's just info@strivingforeternity.com. I'm going to assume that she probably said he, and it just came out sounding that way. that's going to be my assumption.
Plus, I mean, it's not unheard of, right? We do it when we preach all the time. We just misspeak, right?
Dude.
We mean to say something, but then our mind, for some reason, thinks about something else.
What do you think the worst thing someone could say during a sermon could be?
I don't know.
Well, just picture the scene. Drew, you just got done preaching a sermon to a pretty good-sized church. You're feeling pretty good about that sermon. You think it went well. You were well-studied and prepared. And you go to the back, and right away the first person comes up to you is an 8-year-old boy who says, Pastor Andrew, why did you say that Judas died on the cross for our sins? What? Yes, I went back and listened. I asked the church, could you just remove that from the... Yeah, you say these things. And so, actually made that blasphemous statement.
Things like that happen. I mean, I've had it where it's written correctly in my notes, and I look at it, and then I just say the wrong thing.
Yeah.
So it happens.
Well, D said that, I guess she did say it, she's saying if she said it, it was a mistake. And that's, I would agree. I have had the problem where when I get it wrong, I'm consistent. That's the problem. The first time I remember this happening, I don't remember the word, but I replaced one word with another several times, like 3 times in a sermon. And I got done preaching, and one of the ladies in the church comes up and says, Pastor Andrew, why did you replace this with that? Now, my church knew that I would do my own translation. So sometimes, back at that church, we use New King James. But there'd be times I would give my own translation. I'd usually say, you know, if you're looking in your New King James, I'm providing my own translation, because it was just what I didn't think New King James really was good with their translation of a text sometimes.
And it's not, and that's according to Dan Wallace too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's just a matter of, they knew I did that. Well, what ended up happening was this lady says, you know, I couldn't figure out why you translated this word that way. And so I was looking up my MacArthur study notes and I just couldn't understand. And I said, I didn't do that. That wasn't in my notes. Second lady comes up to me, says the same thing. I looked up at my ESV study Bible and, you know, I couldn't figure out why you translated it that way. I'm like, I didn't mean to if I did. Third woman comes up and I'm just like, look, let me go back and re-listen to what I said. So the next week I got up and I said, now some of you are wondering why your pastor translated this word that way. And I saw a bunch of heads nod up and down and I went, because your pastor's an idiot. I mean, that's really I in a sermon, and I went back and listened and even edited in the YouTube. So that I seven times that I used the word, that I meant to use the word, now I'm trying to remember, it was Zacchaeus. I said Ezekiel or Zechariah or something like that. Seven times. I was like, every time in the message, I was consistent. I was just consistently wrong. Man.
That's funny. That one name, you just couldn't get it right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So let's see what we got. So Mr. Honholz here says, my snippy side says to go for it. My rational side says, let it go, not worth it. I'm torn. I think I got the answer. I should go with Chris's snippy side. And then mask the header so that it's coming from Chris Honholz from Voice of Reason Radio. I love that idea, Chris. Thank you. That's my snippy side. It's always better when you do, if you're going to do something snippy or play a practical joke that someone else gets the blame for, right?
That would make Chris Honholz really snippy at you.
Melissa says, I would just let it go and pray for him. Well, I've already done that. It's been like a week or two. Facebook user, a.k.a. We Think Haps, I'd say, appreciate the feedback, brother. That may be. Yeah, the funny thing is, if I was to, like he probably doesn't realize he left the phone number, but if I was to send a letter to the house thanking him for the feedback. Ooh.
A handwritten letter?
Yeah, handwritten letter thanking him.
Probably with a card of Andrew's picture going.
Well, and a gospel track, of course.
Right. Yeah, of course.
I mean,
how could I forget that?
It would just, it freaks some people out when people do things like that,
mm-hmm.
You know? Okay.
Write a handwritten note, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so, John here, and you tagged this one, just for the record, mm-hmm. You tagged it. This was a question. Mm-hmm. Question for Drew. Why are you still post-mill?
No, he says, are you still post-mill? So
No. I think he's really asking, why are you? Are you still post-mill? Because he really wants to know why. That's
adding to what's said. I get it. Yeah.
It's what's really behind the question. John, verify whether that was really your puzzlement. You're trying to figure out why he still is.
Because I'm still biblical. That is why. Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Notice.
He says R, not Y. I know, but why R, I think, is what it should be. Why R? Because we're all curious.
Notice for the listeners. Notice what Andrew did there. I'm stepping in the shoes of Andrew right now. Notice what Andrew did there, right? He added something to the text, and then he assumed that was the underlying meaning of the question.
It's my question then. Humble Clay says I should send him some sushi, kind of like Matt Slick did to me. John is saying, thank you, Drew. Very good. I sure hope that, you know, John is not being swayed by you and your post-mill. So, all right.
He's not. Every time I post something, whether it's eschatology-based or not, he'll write a comment, you know, he appreciates what was said or something like that. And at the very end, he'll go, and post-mill's still wrong. Don't do it every time.
All right. So we got a question that came in here. It is from, and I'm not sure, I've never seen the spelling of a name. So Daron, or I'm gonna assume that.
Maybe Darren.
It could be Darren, but it's different spelling. So, all right. But the question is, just curious, would you consider the churches in Revelation as just literal churches or church ages also? Well, I would say that they're literal churches and nothing more. The church age theory doesn't actually fit. You have people trying to fit it in. They look through history and go, okay, this one is, but there's specific people mentioned, specific groups of people, at least. There's a specific time frame, even 10 days mentioned for one of them. So when you look at it and you see that the root that, you know, you look at the churches and they're kind of along the mail route that people would go to travel to be able to, if you were selling merchants selling products, that's the route that they would go. So it seems that he's writing, you know, to those churches specifically and, you know, pass this along as you go. And so I think that, I'm dispensational, which means I'm going to interpret the Bible more literally, and I'm not going to try to spiritualize or read something into it that's not there. And so when it mentions those churches, I assume they're the actual churches in those actual cities. I think that some of the reason that people give for trying to make it a church age is more to fit a theological system, trying to say, oh, this is long periods of time. Look, all this has been fulfilled already, things like that. So, So let me go to, should I go to this email that we got?
Yeah.
Put this on the...
It's gold.
This is gold. So you guys can appreciate what we get in the ministry. I'm toying with the idea of just... I don't do like Matt Slick and save all my hate mail. I should maybe, so we could do them. I have a couple, but this is just more in the more entertaining one. And this is an actual email that we got at the ministry today. All right? And so... here it is, and it's from Shelley Robinson, and she's with OnlineSafetyMasters.com. Now, I'm going to say that I did look at the blog article she's going to reference, and there's actually some pretty decent tips there. It's just the way that they did it. But here it is. Hello, Andrew. My name is Shelley. I'm an advocate for Black Lives Matter. Now, okay. The subject is how Striving Fraternities users can safely support BLM online. And I saw the subject and went, huh? Not sure why you're contacting me, but now my advocacy for Black Lives Matter. I had to step back for a second and go, did I miss something, Drew? Maybe I came in and did a show when I was so exhausted, so tired, that I just didn't know what I was saying. Maybe I, you know, like the claim of Doreen Virtue said she instead of he. Now, D here is saying, what a scam. No, actually, it's not. It's not a scam. I'll explain. But Chris Honholz is saying the hate mail episodes are entertaining. And so maybe I should try to read some of them. So this is an actual email that I got, and it's actually, they have an actual thing they want from me, but so they claim I'm an advocate for Black Lives Matter. At that point I stopped and said, so why are you contacting me? Well, here's why. I came across your site through my numerous BLM searches and would like to thank you for supporting and writing about this cause. Is right.
Yes, I remember that. I remember that time you supported BLM through YouTube and through blog articles. But I think it was the supporting of doing away with them.
Yeah, well, I'm pulling up the article so that I can reference it. And this one actually wasn't written by me at all, but so I'll show it in a moment. But so it goes on. I would like to share with you an article on staying safe online. I think not many have really thought about while supporting BLM. It is about protecting ourselves online as supporters of black rights. You can find the article here. Bloop, there's the article. I really think it would be a great article to share with your readers. I suggest you sharing it on this page, strivingfraternity.org/, and then it's a biblical response to Black Lives Matter. And so if you want to find it, it's strivingfraternity.org, and then /, and then where there should be spaces, you just put a dash. So it's a biblical response to Black Lives Matter. Thank you for your support, Shelley. I'm like, what? So yeah, the article that Shelley's referring to was written by Justin Pierce, and I could bring that up. Let's see. So first off, I didn't even do that one, but I wonder, you know, let's see if it's a supportive article. So here's a biblical response to Black Lives Matter written by Justin Pierce right there. Not me. Let's see. We have much feedback from our podcasts exposing Black Lives Matter's Marxist political agenda and their anti-Christ satanic beliefs. Here's a link to the
opening sentence.
So I should make this bigger so that those can read it, right? So that is the opening sentence, and I'm going, okay, this is a classic case where what they did was they did a search for Black Lives Matter. When you do a search for things, Striving Fraternity pops up because we have some good SEO, search engine optimization. We've been around for a long time. We get a lot of visitors. That helps. And therefore, people do a search for Black Lives Matter, this is going to show up. But clearly, Shelley didn't read this. Because had she read just the first line, she would have realized that this article is not positive and supportive of Black Lives Matter. But Justin goes on. He links both of the shows that we had dealt with the topic. He says, most comments were positive, yet some were negative. We took a lot of time studying the history, philosophy, and socio-Marxist beliefs of the organization's founders. Dr. Silvestro studied the atheistic and evolutionary background of the woke culture within BLM. And I'm literally getting an email from that Shelley person again. Interesting. Maybe we'll pull that up. So he says he even compiled an impressive bit of notes and thought that he taught at a recent church.
So
she could have gone there. Make no mistake, we strongly and collectively affirm that this movement is satanic, and we have a lot of proofs from the leadership's own words and their writings, as well as warnings from other strong Christian voices who love the Lord, the body of Christ, and the world at large. These godly leaders vehemently plead for biblical Christians to open their eyes to the dangers, nature, and anti-Christian beliefs of the cultural Marxism in all its many forms. Pastor Vodi Bakum, for instance, has powerfully preached about racism and cultural Marxism and provides a link to a sermon. I mean, am I mistaken here? This isn't seeming to be supportive so far.
Mm-mm. Yeah, here's Han Holt says, yeah, I don't think that article says what she thinks it says.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. So this is the sort of stuff where, you know, I just have to laugh when I see this stuff, because it's like, I know you're trying to, and what this person wants is, and this is very common, okay? Striving Fraternity has a like I said, a very large internet presence. I used to actually have a tool where I could do comparisons to see how it ranks with other websites. So you'd be able to go and check your, you know, the ranking of the website, you could, any website. So just to give you an idea, and unfortunately Amazon got rid of this tool, but, and I'm not saying this for bragging, it's just matter of fact of just the way that we write articles, and actually I'm going to try to pull up so I can give you actual numbers. It's the way that we write articles, the number of people who visit the site, the way that the length of time that we've been around, all of those things play into searches and how to get found. And so the last time that we were able to do this, to look at it, and actually what I could do is I can actually show you, and that way I can read it and Let's just share this page. And so this was the last time, so this was 2 or 3 years ago, I think. Actually, I could tell you what year it was. It was 2021 that we did this. And so let me share a window, and here it is. This was our newsletter that we put out, and let me make it a bit larger. Well, that's not helpful. Well, there's the ranking. So that's what it is. So Striving for Eternity, world ranking and U.S. ranking. And so this was at the end of 2021. And our world rank at the time, we were in the top 161,000 websites in the world. Now, there's about, I think at the time that I did this, I don't know if I put this in here. Let me see if I wrote the total. But I think it was like 5 or 8 billion websites. No, I didn't write it in there. There were like 5 or 8 billion websites. Now, granted, a lot of those websites are just a page that's put up and, you know, so there's a bunch of junk out there. But to get ranked in anything under, if you're in the top million, you're considered, like, the tool that Alexa had for their rankings wouldn't even chart it unless you were in the top million. So in the U.S., we ranked 24,000. So in the out of every website in the whole United States, the Striving Fraternity was in the top 24,000. How does that compare to some other ministries? Well, at the time, Living Waters, Ray Comfort, great ministry. I was really surprised, actually, by a lot of these. Especially Living Waters internationally, I thought they'd have a much bigger presence than us. Yeah. They were at the time ranked 604,000 in the world. We were 161. That blew me away. And in the U.S., they didn't even rank. And that just really surprised me. Because I know that they get a lot of people going to their site. But I wonder if more people are going to, like, their YouTube page instead of, because they're not writing blogs and things like that. So maybe that's why.
Probably. Yeah, so that would make sense.
That's what I'm kind of thinking. CARM. Well, now, I'm going to give the preface that CARM used to, years ago, was ranked much higher than us. But they ended up having a data loss, basically a server crashed and it wasn't being backed up, and their numbers tanked. I think they've recovered that now. But at the time where we were 161,000 in the world, they were 261 in the world. And where we were ranked 24,000 in the U.S., they were 109,000 in the U.S. Now, those are the only two of the ministries that I looked at where we did better than them, both U.S. and world. But these other ones, though they beat us in the in the world rankings, which will make sense when I tell you the ministries. What surprised me with these is we did better than them in just in the U.S. So Answers in Genesis was 34,000 in the world. Grace to You, this really shocked me. They were 48,000 in the world, but 72,000 in the U.S.
That is pretty shocking.
Yeah, that tells me that Grace to You has a much bigger international presence than American presence.
I'm just gonna throw this out there, right? John MacArthur is reaching people all over the world, according to that number.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very post-mill view right there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very post-mill with his premillennial view. Ligonier Ministry.
Premillennial view, but hey, yeah. The post-mill is coming out.
Ligonier Ministry in the U.S. was the closest to us. Ligonier Ministry was 27,000 in the U.S. compared to our 24. And then Bible.org was 31,000 in the U.S. Mr. Tracy saying, where did you get those numbers? Let's see if I can highlight this, if it'll highlight. It was the Amazon used to have a tool called Alexa Traffic Rankings. Unfortunately, they don't have it anymore. Actually, it was January of 2022 that they had gotten rid of this. And so this was the last time that I was able to get numbers from that. But, you know, we spent a lot of, during COVID, you know, and this was our newsletter, and you know, this is basically what this was talking about. I had said we cannot count on social media to promote Christian materials anymore. Remember, this is 2021. We were seeing Christians being shut down in 2020. Mm-hmm. And so right. I made the effort in 2020 to really make sure that our articles were well written for SEO so that people would find them. This is the advantage of being part of the Christian podcast community is people that are part of the Christian podcast community, when people search things, because of the power of Striving for Eternity's internet presence, it helps people to find the podcasts at the Christian podcast community because we've tied those two websites together. Actually, our web developer didn't want us doing that. And I said, no, we're doing that. But I said, with big tech companies censoring Christians, we have focused on making sure that when people are searching for things on the internet, then they find SFE. Spelling mistake. By the end of the year, Alexa rankings had SFE ranking higher in the United States than many well-known ministries. We also rank higher in the world than some of the same ministries. So then I provided that chart. So, you know, all that, and that's not, I'm not posting that to like some sort of bragging rights. The numbers are the numbers. And so it's just a matter that, you know, I was saying that to say that we have a lot of people. I get literally emails daily of people that want to blog for us and, or they want to have us tag an article because they know that one of the ways to build SEO to get found is if you have a very large site that links to you, that becomes something that ends up helping your SEO. The search engines look at that and say, oh, okay, if others are looking at it, there must be something here. And so that's why you see, that's why I get so many of those type of, so I didn't think, for D who thought it was a scam, I knew it wasn't a scam. What I figured it was, is exactly what it is. Someone is saying, hey, can you link to us on your article? Now, usually what I get is people that say, hey, you know, we got some great people that can write articles for you.
You feature them on your website?
This was a couple months ago, maybe 2 months ago. An atheist blogger. And they did the same thing. They searched for atheism and found our site, didn't look at it whatsoever. And we're like, you know, We have a couple of bloggers, and they can write great articles, you know, to help you out with your site. All we ask is that you'd link back to our, you know, let them link back to our site. And I'm like, your site's an atheist site. Like, okay, do you know anything about striving for eternity?
even in now, some people who listen may go, but that sounds so innocent. Why not? Well, even in something like that, what fellowship does light have with darkness, right? It doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Melissa says, maybe the Black Hebrew Israelites will support you now, Andrew. I don't think so, Melissa. Yeah. I think not. It's a pity that they got rid of that, because it was really helpful. You know why I originally started using that? Is if you go to a website to purchase something, mm-hmm. and you want to know if the website's legit, if they're not in the top million, I wouldn't buy from them. Because it means they're not getting, you know, that people will set things up, because it's easy to set up a web page and could direct it and they just take your money.
I almost got scammed the same way, okay? Because people they set up those dummy accounts, those dummy pages. And you go to them, and they have product, and it looks real. It has a checkout and everything. It looks absolutely real. Your credit card, if you have it on your phone, will auto-populate, and it will look real until you find out it's a scam. Because, you know, they're selling $150 dress shoes for $20, right? It sounds really good, and then they have fake reviews. Oh, these are great. They have fake pictures. Oh, look at how good they look. And people can set it. It's so easy for people to do, and they do it all the time in order to scam people and take their money.
Yeah, actually, I mean, there's a lot. Let's get into some, I said my background, right? So for folks that don't know, I actually have a background in cybersecurity. So for many years, I used to catch bad guys for a living, shall we say, using the things like the internet. But one of the things that we did, another person that I was working with, we knew something was up with somebody, and we needed to find out if we could prove that several different accounts were actually the same person. Now, how can you do that? Well, do you
match the same IP address?
Well, but how do you get the IP address, right? I mean, we're talking about different, you know, different accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we did was send to their social media, to each account, a message that said we had a personalized, I forget if it was like New Year's card or Valentine's Day card or something like that, maybe a Christmas card, I forget what it was, maybe it was Christmas. And it was a personalized. And we knew, now we could personalize it. Why? Because we knew who we were sending it to. Uh-huh. And so we created a page that had their name. It was just like this card that had their name, and we wrote something that was made it personal. But once they went to the web page, we got the IP address because they hit the page. Uh-huh. And so because we made these, so we made like three different websites that they didn't realize all went to a site that we had grabbed the domain for and set it up. It took us, you know, maybe, you know, an hour to set it all up. Mm. And, you know, we just set up three pages, done. And all we did was put some personal things in there from their social media so that it would draw them in to want to see what the other personal notes were.
Right.
And so as they clicked each one, we were able to prove that all three of those accounts were coming from the same IP address. Mm-hmm. So what the person was doing was just changing, like, either browsers or, you know, logins, mm-hmm. or whatever, and checking them all out. And so we got them pegged. So, and the reason we did it is they were scamming people. They were using social media to you know, ask for money. You know, oh, I'm a struggling Christian, da 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 da, and there was just something with it, and it was like, no. And so, me and a friend of mine who's got a background in tech, we're like, okay, let's figure this out. Let's know for sure whether it's the same person.
We've got some downtime, you know, let's just have a little fun.
It was only an hour, come on. I mean, we figure we save people money because, you know, there were people that were going to send money. So let's see. So we got some comments here. Oh yeah. Mr. Tracy, says he met me at Ambassador's Academy. Well, shoot me a picture. If you and I have a picture together, shoot it to me at info@strivingfraternity.com. I'll put that up again. So I could see what you look like and remember that. But info@strivingforeternity.com. All right. So we don't have, you know, looking for the really hard questions from folks, and no one's coming in with questions, but which we want. But let's see. Trying to see what we have as questions. So there's two you got marked here. So let's start with the first one from Jim. You want to read that one?
Yeah, he says, here in the Philippines, we are divided in the idea that an Arminian who totally wrestles against the 5 points of Calvinism can still be considered saved. So an Arminian that is against the 5 points of Calvinism, can they be saved?
Yeah, I would say yes. Both, you know, Calvinism and anti-Calvinist can be saved. And I say anti-Calvinist because, you know, to be honest with you, folks, there's not too many Arminians out there.
Right.
They're actually anti-Calvinist. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And people wouldn't even, the free will crowd, they wouldn't call themselves Arminian because I think they know enough to know if you stay on that path, it naturally and consistently will lead to universalism or open theism.
Open theism, yeah.
And they don't want to go down that path. So they go, well, no, we reject Arminianism also, but we're just free will. We believe man has free will, but we reject the 5 points of Calvinism.
Yeah. Oh, look, KT is saying, so has Andrew figured out everything about all my social media accounts? KT?
Well, he will now.
Some things just don't get announced, so that you got to hide a little. So that now she's okay. We should get Mr. Honholds to get in here and tell this story because he could tell better. But I jokingly this really happened, and I would love to go back and figure out which episode this happened on. I know how I could probably figure it out, but Chris Honholds would before he goes to record Voice of Reason Radio, he would usually put out a tweet and put out a Facebook saying, hey, we're going to record, pray for us. So he puts it out and they start recording. And I unknowingly, because they're recording and I don't hear their recording supposedly. And so, you know.
Oh, I remember this story.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know where you're going.
Chris is saying, careful, he may bug your house. Well, what happened was is Chris, says at the beginning of their episode, he said something. Now, 20 minutes into their recording, I type to Chris, yes, I know you started recording. I'm looking at the camera that I installed in your house over your right shoulder. Well, what did Chris say 20 minutes earlier in the recording? He says to Rich, well, I put out a post saying that we're going to be recording asking for prayer, you know, but Andrew Rappaport probably already knows that because he probably installed cameras in my house so he knows everything I'm doing. 20 minutes later, Rich is trying to say something, and all of a sudden Chris just bursts out laughing. Now Chris has to explain to his co-host, why is he laughing? He's laughing because he just read my response, which now makes it sound like there was a camera over his shoulder. I'm not saying whether there was. I'm not saying whether there wasn't. But I'm just saying. All right. So D asks the question here. Can you explain your view of the Kingsman Redeemer view of the genealogy, sorry, of Luke? I mentioned it to my pastor, and he said he'd look into it. So
yeah,
let me.
We talked about this when we had Ben Zion on.
Correct.
Talking a while ago. Yeah.
Yeah, Ben Zion was the Orthodox rabbi who came in, and he also contacted the ministry, which is how that started. So the first I saw this was in if I remember correctly, it was Philip Schaff's History of the Church. And he referred to one of the early church fathers that mentioned that there was a kinsman redeemer in the line of Joseph. Joseph, the husband of Mary, mother of Jesus. And so I, doing original research, went back to that. He cited it, and I don't remember what it was today, but I went back and looked in the early church fathers, found what he was referencing to, and sure enough, you know, in about, I think if I remember correctly, it was about 240 to 270 that it was written, that there was a reference to a kinsman redeemer in Joseph. So that's pretty early on. So now, was this an early church father who was trying to reconcile these two and was just making it up or guessing? That's possible. You know, because people have struggled with these two genealogies, and that's why you get the one that says this is a genealogy of Mary, this one's of Joseph, but both say they're from Joseph is the problem. And so if there's a kinsman redeemer in the family, in the family line of Joseph, then you could have both as genealogies of Joseph, because one is from the line of the kinsman redeemer and one is the biological line. Now, if you're not familiar with a kinsman redeemer, let me explain what that is. And the clearest you could see is in the book of Ruth. Book of Ruth has this where you have Boaz is going to be a kinsman redeemer. And so the children he would have with Ruth, though biologically through Boaz, the genealogical record would be through her first husband, whose name I don't remember offhand. That's how a kinsman redeemer works. And that's why, even if you look in the book of Ruth, there's a closer kinsman, and Boaz goes to meet with them and say, and the guy's like, hey, I can get all that land? Great. And Boaz says, yes, and you get Ruth to raise children with under her first husband's name. And the guy goes, oh, no, I don't want to split my inheritance, because what he would have to do by marrying Ruth is take his inheritance, and any children he has with Ruth has to be split with those children as well, but not under his own name. So his lineage is with his children, but not the ones from Ruth. They would, the way the lineage would work, it would be under her first husband. So that's the way that it would work. So that's how I would see that you have both lineages going through Joseph. Now, I saw you flipping open, a Bible. So
I was just opening it up just in case you were going to any passages. But, you know, that back then when we were talking about this very thing, because I had found it intriguing also, I went and looked for some videos or some lectures talking about it, and there's several you can find out there on YouTube that explain a lot of the different positions of the genealogy of Jesus, and this is one of them. And they go into a little more depth than what Andrew's able to go to, you know, here on a show, but it is fascinating to hear the different perspectives.
So we see an arm behind you.
She's trying to stay out of the
I know shot. She is. All right. So this next question is from...
I don't know why she doesn't come at least show herself on the camera. She's so
she
pretty.
Should.
She just looked at me like I was crazy.
Okay. So why do I keep the camera zoomed in the way I do with blockiness? Because my bride wants... There's a garbage can right here. and I have a desk that wraps around. And so she actually crawled all the way over because she needed to get there. And she didn't want to be seen. There was one time she's sneaking behind me. But so this next question is by someone who maybe what we should do is say he's not allowed to ask the question unless he comes in, because he knows how to get in here. And we know he's not afraid of being on camera. But Mr. Anthony Silvestro asked this question. Is the Biden administration partially responsible for the attacks on Israel, given the Afghanistan pullout and the weapons that went through the hands of Ukraine and into the hands of those in Hamas?
I wouldn't say partially. I'd say they are.
Correct.
Just like Obama was responsible for ISIS getting all the American weapons that they got when we pulled our troops out and then just left everything.
That's a very similar thing to what we did in Afghanistan. This is the way that Barack Obama, who is probably the one really running the country right now.
Probably, yes.
This is the way they end up doing things, is to just pull out and leave everything behind. Make up an excuse, pull out, and our enemies get lots of weapons. But I would say not just with the pullout of Afghanistan, but also the releasing of $6 billion to Iran, which freed them up to, and it's like, oh no, they're just spending that money on humanitarian aid. Yes, and that freed up $6 billion that they were going to use for aid to now give to Hamas.
And Hezbollah.
Yeah. And so I would agree with you, Drew, I don't think they're partially responsible. I think the Biden administration is completely responsible for October 7th.
You also see what, you know, people ask Biden, does he support Israel? And he'll say, yeah, I support Israel, but then he does nothing to support Israel.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's talking tough, and then he's releasing now I think he's released $10 billion. Like, they froze the $6 billion. And now he's freed up $10 billion. So...
how does that work?
Yeah. You know? And they're sending aid to Hamas, which, what did they do with it? I mean, there's actually videos that Hamas has. It was on Al Jazeera Network, where Hamas, the aid is coming in, and Hamas is pushing people away. They can't get to the trucks, and they're just taking it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Right from the people. Oh, here we go. Mr. Tracy said Anthony was his team leader at Ambassador's Academy. So there we go. So then that means you definitely should have a picture of you and I together. So, yeah, I'm not sure what the reference that Anthony had was with Ukraine giving weapons to Hamas, because I think the weapons from Afghanistan went through either directly to Hamas or through Iran.
Yeah, unless Anthony knows something that we don't about it, I'm not sure about the Ukraine tie-in with Hamas.
I mean,
he would have to tell me.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. Okay, let me give my prediction. I'm not a prophet, but I think that I believe that the Marxists thought that Jewish people would be very similar to American people, that Hamas could attack. Israel was very, very divided at the time. And so I think they thought that Hamas could attack, and all of the folks that were against Netanyahu would blame him, pull away, not give support, and that would be that.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that's what the thought was. And so what they didn't count on was Israel unifying and looking to say, we're going to you know, stand up against this, and we're going to be one country and unite around defeating an enemy. And that, because that's what happened. I think that surprised the Marxists. I mean, they've been trying to say that, you know, after that happened, they're trying to say, oh, Netanyahu's behind the whole thing. He's doing this just to get the whole country behind him. Well, I remember October 7th, CNN, I mean, every person they had on from Israel was someone who was against Netanyahu, and they were trying to create a divide, and people were like, now's not the time for this. We're one country. We're united on this. We can have our differences later. And that surprised people. But I think what's surprising some people here in America, you can look at the way people are reacting with, you know, the president of, you know, in Pennsylvania, the university and Harvard, and I forget where the other, but people don't understand what the nation of Israel means to Jewish people. And how much this has rallied people. I know many, many liberal, very liberal Jewish people. I got a friend of mine. If I would never, ever expect him to ever say he would vote for Trump. Okay, he hated Trump. Well, I should say hates Trump. But he told me, if it is Biden and Trump, he will vote for Trump to get rid of Biden because of Israel. I mean, universities are losing tons of money because they don't understand what it means to Jewish people to have the nation of Israel, to have a place to call home, to have something after the Holocaust, you know, where they would be able to flee if something like that happens again, to know that there's somewhere that would welcome them, okay? They didn't have that during Nazi Germany. There's records. People that came by ship even to America, came all the way to America by ship, and America stopped them at sea and sent them back. And they returned back, were captured and killed. I mean, there's all kinds of people that made exodus to many different countries, and the country said, no, we won't take you. And so that still is in the mindset for many Jewish people. And the idea of having a place that if things get bad wherever, America, Canada, you know, Cuba, where there's a place that they could flee if there's people trying to do a genocide with Jewish people, which is what the Harvard presidents couldn't say.
Right.
I mean, if I was asking her questions, I would just say, you know, I'd ask the question because she's saying it's, you know, certain context, as long as they don't act on it, my follow-up question would be, if someone uses the wrong pronoun.
You're right.
You know, does the context matter? Right?
And
if someone wants to eliminate all blacks, does context matter? The answer is no.
Yeah, you know, people forget what you're talking about with the Holocaust, right? That was just 2-page terms of the history book, right? It's not that long ago.
My father's generation.
Yeah, and people act like it never happened, like it wasn't a big deal, right? No, it was horrific, and like you said, it was in your father's generation, which is not that long ago.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When I grew up in Hebrew school, one of the things, and I've shared this here, but there's probably new listeners, one of the big things, being a generation after the Holocaust, we were drilled into us how to recognize another Holocaust. What to notice the signs. Because the belief was that there would be another Holocaust. And we needed to be able to recognize the signs. So it was there. And part of that's also the importance of a nation of Israel so that we had a place to flee to if there was another Holocaust somewhere in the world. And so my prayer for the next election is that if the Democrats continue down this road where they are trying to support the, you know, Hamas, then what I anticipate might happen, I mean, you're already seeing a huge vote shift from black and Hispanic, from Democrat to Republican. And, you know, the numbers that are always said is that if the Democrats can't, if the Democrats lose 18% of the black vote, they can't win an election. Well, Trump, I think, got 12%. He doubled the amount, because it used to be 2-5 was the most a Republican could get. That's shifting. And if that shifts, if that shifts to 20%, and then you have the Hispanic, if all of these illegal immigrants who are fleeing, the ones that are actually fleeing countries to be here for a better life, and they see that Biden and the Democrats are trying to bring in the very thing they were fleeing from, I think what you're going to end up seeing is a big support for blacks, a big support from Hispanics, and now the largest voting bloc that Democrats get is the Jewish, liberal Jewish vote. And I think they don't realize that they may lose that. And there is the possibility that they're going to go down this road and go too far with it to where they're going to, they'll do their polling and realize, oh, we got to get the Jewish vote, and they're going to try appealing to Jewish people. And I think it'll be too late. At least that's what I'm hoping. And if the Democrats lose those three groups by large enough numbers, I wonder if they'll be able to manufacture enough votes in false ballots to be able to overcome it. Because in 2016, what I think happened is they were stealing it. They just didn't think they needed to do too much to get it, and did not realize the support that Trump had. Mm-hmm. They weren't going to take any chances in 2020, and they got caught because they were pulling out all the stops. Well, I think they're going to get caught again.
Yeah. Which, when you look at the way Joe Biden campaigned in 2020, he campaigned as a guy who either didn't want to win or knew he was going to win, because he didn't campaign at all. But it's interesting that the left continually calls the right and conservatives Nazis, while they're the ones that are against Israel. They're the ones that are supporting a group that wants to exterminate Israel.
Yeah. So Melissa says this, my grandfather helped hide many, and it should be Hyde, just in case, because she posted a correction right there. Before you tell me I'm adding words. My grandfather helped hide many Jewish people from the Nazis. He was part of the Dutch underground. Melissa, thank you for your grandfather. Sorry. I do get choked up on this. It is something that does affect me. I will admit that. It's kind of interesting. A lot of people celebrate Christmas and whatnot, and I don't have any nostalgia with it. I don't have, I didn't grow up with Christmas trees and all, but I did grow up with a menorah, and I haven't had a menorah in the house since I left for college, but I did this year. And I've been, lighting the candles each night. And I think there is that. It's not that I'm worshiping or, it's a remembrance. So Chris Honholz says this, that there's a long time between now and the election. I'm not going to hold my breath. I'm not either, Chris. I know they're going to look for ways to, they got to do it. They're now realizing, right? They're complaining about the Republicans doing an impeachment inquiry on Biden because the Democrats changed the rules so that they can impeach Trump. And they don't want the Republicans to use the rules that they changed. Like, somehow that's not fair.
Yeah, and nothing's more obvious than when a sitting president has his presidential rival that's going to be running against him, who is more popular than him, brought up on charges and tried to put in prison. Nothing's more obvious, right? And nothing's more illegal also.
Yeah. Melissa said, my grandfather is my hero. Well, he's mine too. I mean, to do that, people don't understand. I don't think we understand in America what a sacrifice that is to be willing to do something like that.
Yeah, because if you got caught,
yeah,
you died also.
You died, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to read to keep up with some of these things. So Jim has a follow-up. He says, follow-up question. Let me rephrase the question. An Arminian who wrestled against what the Bible teaches, what I believe is 5-point, can still be saved. I'm saying both sides could be saved, Jim. By the way, I should announce, Jim, since you're mentioning you're from the Philippines, we have confirmed I will be returning to the Philippines. I'll be in Manila. Let me try to pull up the dates, but we're going to be, it's right now it's looking like we've added to the roster. So not just Justin Peters and myself, but I believe now we are including, none other than your favorite preacher and mine, Drew. And that is?
Jim Osmond.
You got it.
Nice.
Yes.
I do love Jim's preaching.
I know.
It's amazing. It's so good. It's really good.
And one day you're going to love his eschatology. So.
I told you, if anyone's going to move me into that position, it'll be Jim.
For good reason. Okay, I gotta find the email to where we, so I could put it up on screen for do. We had all these emails and I'm trying to find them now.
Well, for listeners who don't know about Jim Osmond, you need to look up his ministry and look up his expository preaching ministry. You can find it on Striving for Eternity, the Christian podcast community. Every time, now I love talking with Jim. I love listening to Jim. But every time he's on the show, I always have a pen and paper because you never know what he's going to, and it could just be the littlest thing, right? Yeah, I mean, We did a whole discussion because he said a throwaway comment in a sermon.
An offhanded comment in his sermon.
An offhanded comment, yeah.
He said it and I got me like, what?
Right.
And that sparked.
Like, wait. What did you say? Like, I got to think about that. I have to sit down. I have to think about that. I have to mull that over for a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. So let me bring this up for Jim, the calendar, the plan here, see what will work best with his schedule. But here you go. So we will be going, and I'm going to tell, for listeners, I'm going to tell you how you can help us with this. But April 24th, we will arrive in Manila. They give us no rest, by the way. I think the last time I was there in 2019, I think I was there for 10 or 12 days and spoke like 20 or 22 times. Okay. So they put us to work and that's fine. We told them like, hey, that's great. We get, you know, we'll land. Last time we landed, we got to our hotel by like 1 and 2 in the morning. We were at a radio for an interview at 8 in the morning and we had to drive there. So yeah. So 25th, we got a radio interview. There will be a pre-conference on Friday the 26th. We're still working out details of that. But so far, the topics were looking really good. We're probably going to deal with social justice, Roman Catholicism possibly. But the main conference it's going to be titled Strange Fire. So that'll give some of you guys an idea of what we're going to deal with. But we are going to deal with the charismatic movement, the demon slayers, or whatever they call themselves. So we're going to have, the topics are going to be, Justin's going to talk about the history of history of the charismatic movement. I'm going to cover whether miracles are for today. Jim is going to deal with hearing the voice of God. Jim's other talk is going to be on the recent movements of the demon-possessed, the demonizing...
The deliverance movement?
Yeah, the whole deliverance movement. And then we're going to have... actually, I can look up the titles. So let's see if I could share this one too. Oh, you just see my mouse moving, so hold on. Let me switch to this one, and I'll show you what we're going to be, what the topics are, although we worded it a bit differently.
Jim here is asking, what does RRCC mean, and where is it located?
So RCC is the Reformed, hold on. Let me look up Pastor Armand. It's the church. It's the church that is hosting this, and he is, I'm just going to pull it up to get the name because I forget the name. Rock of Refuge. That's what it is. Rock of Refuge Christian Church. I always forget that. And it's in New Manila in Quezon City, Quezon City. It is a would be a Reformed church, by the way. And so, since you were looking for a Reformed church, and if I could find the window that I brought up, I would be able to share this. Where did it go? All right, well.
See, that's what happens when you have so many windows open on your computer.
Yeah, I wonder if it's that or if it's, oh, I see what I need to do. It's not recognizing it as a window, but now I think it will. Yeah. Okay. So there we go. So here's the schedule for the Manila conference. Justin would deal with the history of the charismatic movement. I'm then going to give a biblical case for cessationism, providing an overview of 1 Corinthians 12, 13, and 14. Jim's topic will be Jim's topic, he retitled that. That's going to be the sufficiency of Scripture versus private revelation. Justin's going to do Christian mysticism and tongues. I will then cover the topic of should we expect miracles today? And then Jim's next topic is retitled as Devils, Deliverance, and Demon Slayers, the Modern Day Exorcists. So that is the what we have there. And then to get back to what, and the reason I'm sharing this is because I'm going to have an appeal for you guys to really help out, how you can help bring this about. So the plan is, you can see, we're going to be there for 2 weeks. So we land on the 24th, we got the radio interview, the 25th, the 26th, we got a pre-conference that we're going to do somewhere between 3 to 6 sessions there between the three of us. Then we have the Manila conference on Saturday. They're expecting about 800 people. Now, last time we were in the Sky Dome with 1,500 people that came. And so, and this is a huge thing for the folks down in the Philippines. It makes a major impact. I'm saying that because we've seen and we hear the testimonies even now, and I'm going to share some with you. But the Manila conference on the 27th, we're going to be preaching at Rock of Refuge Christian Church. Now, what they're going to do is one of us will be preaching there. The other two will be at two other churches that they're going to work out so that we're all preaching somewhere on the 28th on Sunday. The 29th, we're going to fly to an island of Palawan. And we haven't figured out what we're doing there. Then we fly back to Manila. We'll have a church camp that Friday and Saturday, preaching the Lord's Day at, you know, again on the 5th, and then we fly to Bahal, and then that next day, Monday, the 6th, we do that same conference that we did in Manila in Bahal, and then we fly back to Manila to fly home on the 8th. Busy schedule. They will have us working. I mean, we will be doing a lot of preaching. So I'm saying that to say this. We do need your help with this. Okay? You can help us get there, because the church there takes care of the hotels and those flights when we're there, not when we get there. So we're looking at flights. I priced out the flights. The cheapest flight I can find is $2,400. And our ministry has to cover that. Now, understand.
Is that per person or for everyone?
That's per person.
Oof.
Yeah. So, which is not outside. Last year, when it was Justin and I, Striving Fraternity ended up ordering the tickets, and it was about $4,800 for the two of us to go. So that's actually kind of stayed consistent pre-COVID to post-COVID, so which I was surprised at. So when I priced out the tickets, that's what I can find. So this is not a cheap thing. And this is something where, look, folks, you can have a major impact in the Philippines by helping us get there. Okay? They don't pay us to speak. They just take care of the money they're raising is to take care of the hotel and the flights for us when we're there. And it's not like we can sell lots of books there, because you can only bring so many, you know, bags, and it has to go with luggage with us. So if you can help support it, that would be great. You can go to strivingfraternity.org/support. You can give a one-time gift, and you know, I think there's a place you could put in a note and just say for the Philippines trip. Or if there isn't a place to, you know, to leave a note, donate there the one time, and then send us an email saying, hey, I donated this amount for the Philippines. We need to raise $2,500 per person to be able to get over to the Philippines. So what kind of impact has it had?
Well you got to get back too. Remember that. Or is that both round trip?
That's round trip. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah, no, I'm planning on getting back. My wife is not coming with me. You know, I mean, I'd love to bring her, but at $2,500, ministry can't send her. But yeah, what's kind of some of the impact? Well, when we were talking with the folks in the Philippines, there's actually a new church that was just formed, because when we were there last time speaking about the truth of God's word against things like women preachers, that there were a bunch of people who basically had problems in their churches because of women preachers, and started a new church with lots of other people that were leaving other churches because of the conference that we had in 2019. Just think, I mean, a new church formed biblically because of the fact that Justin and I were there. A really neat story. This is a touching story to me personally. The church I attend, we had started attending there. My pastor's son is a missionary. He was a missionary in Cambodia. His wife is from the Philippines. And so they were coming back stateside. And they were both missionaries in Cambodia. They come back to America. And my pastor and his wife are picking them up from the airport. And all of a sudden I get a text from my pastor's wife. And she says, Andrew, did you preach in the Philippines? And I responded, yes. And she said, were you preaching there with some guy named Justin Peters? And I said, yes. And then the next text I got was, our daughter-in-law was at that conference. And credits that conference with a lot of her maturity. She had recently gotten saved but wasn't in a good church. And that conference, that she still has her notes. She showed me her notes. She still has her notes. That conference is what put her on a trajectory of sound theology. And I mean, I'm still in touch with a woman who, she worked at a radio station that interviewed us, and we talked about the problems with Bethel and Hillsong. And that's mostly what they were playing on the radio. And she actually left the radio station because of the music they were playing. She got committed. She left the church she was attending, because a big thing that we dealt with last time was the Word of Faith movement, and it's rampant there. There are so many people that emailed me after I got home from that conference because of the fact that they were asking me, where's a good church to go to, because you know we have to leave our church. I mean, our church just is not biblical. And dozens and dozens of people were reaching out to Justin and I. And I only knew the one of a couple of churches, right? So Jim, I hope that I will be able to meet you, out there, so that you now know when we'll be there, where we'll be. I hope to be able to meet you. Just come up and say, hey, I'm Jim from, Apologetics Live. It would be great. But I let those in your area know about it, because I really want to see this have the impact that it had before. What was the impact? Well, one of their biggest Word of Faith leaders ended up, there was a Twitter going back and forth between Justin and I and one of their largest church pastors out there. And they accused Justin and I of, because we named names of Filipino pastors that were Word of Faith and preaching a false gospel. And that had a ripple effect in the Philippines. And they accused us of not being willing, that we were naming names publicly when we weren't willing to go to them privately. But what backfired on them is one of my requests to the Filipino church that was hosting it was to set up a dinner, or at least a meeting, with these different pastors that we were going to name. And they all rejected that meeting. So the reality is, I ended up saying, we tried to meet with you, because it was actually the son. The guy was like, you're insulting my father on his birthday. You have no respect. We didn't know it was his birthday, but we didn't plan the conference around your dad's birthday. Sorry, your dad's not that important. And he starts accusing Justin of, because it was Justin who named his father, of doing this publicly and not privately. And I said, I'm sorry, but we actually did try to meet with your father, and he was unwilling to meet. So
yeah, kind of changes the tune there, right?
Yeah.
We say, well, we tried to meet with you. We tried to talk with you. You had no interest. And so then what are we to do?
Yeah.
Not to mention, I mean, Scripture isn't against naming names. Scripture names names, right? John names people. Paul names people. But, at least, you say, hey, we were trying to do you a courtesy by meeting with you. And it's not required, but we were trying to do it anyway.
Yeah, well, here, you know why I wanted to do it? I wanted them to know exactly what we were going to preach about them.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to hear right from our mouths. And because my hope was that we could lead them to Christ.
Yeah, minister to them, yeah.
Because if they get saved, they go back to their church and could say, folks, I'm stepping down because I'm a false teacher.
Right.
Here's what I learned. Like, that would be great. Get, mm-hmm. Get someone biblical to come in and take over the church. Maybe see a revival there. And so that's sort of the stuff that we're looking for to see happen again. And so if you guys can help out with that, just go to strivingforeternity.org/support. It would have a huge impact. Look, I'm just going to be open and honest with you guys. Since COVID, we have not had great years with donations. As the economy is getting harder, our supporters are dropping. It is difficult. And, so we run a tight ship. I mean, the way we do it, about about 76% of all donations that come in go toward the ministry. Okay, we don't, you know, we have speakers that aren't taking salaries. Okay, I get a very small salary, but it doesn't even, it's not even enough to cover even part of my mortgage payment, right?
And I told Andrew, he doesn't have to pay me for being here, you know. I just show up out of the kindness of my heart and my love for Andrew.
Yeah. Well, it's a thing where, you know, we want the money to go toward ministry. And that's why we've structured the ministry the way we have, so people have other ways of having an income to make sure that the money donated is going toward ministry. So if you guys can help out with that, it would be a great blessing. I'm going to end up putting a newsletter out. I got to do it at the beginning of the year to raise the funds for it, because, you know, it is tight enough that if we can't raise the money for this trip, then we end up having to say that we can't go to churches here in America that are small and don't have the money to have us come out. And so we don't want to have to make that call. And so, okay, I see that there's three stars, but I don't know where they are. So why don't you put them up, whatever you were starring there?
Yeah, sure. So Chris says, when you're talking about coming back from the Philippines, Andrew says, oh, dang, you mean we have to let Andrew come back?
Well, Chris,
which is really funny, because KT and Jesus immediately said that Chris is getting a little feisty in his first retirement.
Well, Chris, if you're willing to pay for the one-way trip, I'll take it. I'll get someone else to pay the other one way back.
But at least Chris could say, I tried to get rid of him.
Yeah.
It was someone else that brought him back.
That's right. My wife might be one that would want to bring me back.
Melissa says, Andrew, I would like to donate $100. Can I send your ministry a check?
Yes, you can. And if you go to the support page, there should be the address, which is on there. But the address is Striving for Eternity, P.O. Box 361, Langhorne, Pennsylvania, and that's 19047. So yeah, checks are great, because then we don't lose the fees to PayPal or Patreon or anyone else.
Right. And then Brother John says, I'm a graduate of Rhema, and my family are lifelong friends with the, he means Hagans, Kenneth Hagin, with the Hagans and Kenneth Copeland, to name a few leaders in that movement.
Wow. Yeah, that is, it's good that you got out of that, John. Yeah.
And for people that don't know, Rhema is a charismatic college that was started by Kenneth Hagin.
Yeah. Yeah. A pretty big one too. So, yeah, I mean, if you guys can help out, I mean, I don't, you know, you regular listeners, you know, I don't ask for money. You know, we mention it once in a while, but you know, this is a specific need. It's a large sum, and so I know last time that we put an appeal out, I think we asked for it twice. I think I asked in the newsletter, we put out two newsletters, and all $4,800 came in to send Justin and I there. This time we're sending three people. And so, I mean, in total, the three of us need to raise $7,500. And so we can go. We're going to go either way. The three of us have committed, or at least, let's put it this way. Justin and I have committed. Jim still has to work some things out. You know, he's pastoring a church, and he's been gone for 2 weeks. This will be Jim's first international speaking trip. So, it's a big deal. We really want to see that happen. But, Justin and I have already told the church we're going to come no matter what. But for Striving for Eternity, if we go there and we can't raise the funds, it means we have to say no to some churches. And that's one of the reasons I haven't been booking for next year. There's a bunch of churches that have been asking, and I haven't been booking yet, because I got to hold off to see if we have the money to be able to go to these other places next year. And that's only going to, we're only going to be able to say yes if we can raise the funds for that. So if you can help us make a major impact on the Philippines, I can't express how much of an impact it had last time we were there. On so many different areas, word of faith, women preachers, the charismatic movement, reformed theology, those things were areas that were such an issue down there that it had a big impact all the way across the country. You know, I mean, all the different islands. There's like, I think, 7,000 islands. Now, not all, I think only like 2,000 of them are inhabitable, Drew, it's crazy that at the Sky Dome after the Manila conference last time, they had everyone come up, take pictures, and it was 3.5 hours of picture taking. You want to talk about, Justin and I were looking at each other like, Justin and I go to each other like, man, my cheeks hurt from smiling. But people would come up and I just ask people, hey, you know, how did you get here? Like, how long did it take you? Most people were taking multiple modes of transportation. When I say that, I mean walking, bus, boat, plane, train. Actually, I don't think I remember train. Maybe not train.
And probably people taking a plane to get on a bus.
Oh, no. They would take
on a boat.
The average I found was that it was people took three different modes of major transportation, right? So, like, it was bus. It was either a boat or a plane with a bus and then having a walk. Walk a large distance. And
right,
so...
Right.
People were I think the average was like 10 hours to get to this conference. People were traveling.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't get this often enough and yeah. With solid teachers, and people were coming from all of the islands.
And in America, you know, if it rains, people don't want to get out on a Sunday
okay.
and go to church.
Funny you say it. So when we were at the Sky Dome, Justin was first up preaching. Toward the beginning of his message, the air conditioning went out. And this is in the hot season. When I came out, I was sweating so much. They put a 6-foot fan. They rolled it out like while I'm preaching because they got the big screen TVs and they're zoomed in my face and I sweat and it's just pouring. And so they bring in this huge fan and they're blowing it on me. There was no air conditioning all day in the hot heat of Manila, and no one left. Not even after lunch. I thought everyone was going to vacate after lunch. They stayed. Okay, let me correct that. They all stayed. All except for, you're going to love this. There was a table. In the front, they had these VIP seatings. And so they had a table that was like all women. And in Justin's first message, he mentioned that it's not biblical to have women pastors. And that entire table got up and left in between. They were all female pastors. And so, yeah, there was an empty table right in front. And I remember going like, hey, I thought there were people sitting there. I remember at lunch, I was asking someone, I said, what happened to that table? You know, and they were all female pastors.
There's nothing we can learn here.
Yeah. But you know what? Let me tell you, here's an interesting thing. Because people watched the live stream of Manila, when we last time went from Manila, we did the same conference down in Cebu, people already heard it. And so one of the questions that we ended up getting in the Q&A that was written in before we started preaching, from what I understand, was a question of, if I go to a church with a female pastor, if our church has a female pastor, what do we do to remove her? You know, like, if we can't remove her, what do we do? So people were already thinking through the fact that they had to make major decisions. Asking their pastor, quote-unquote pastor, to resign because they're in an unbiblical position or have to leave their church. You know, that's a big deal.
Right. Yeah. Well, the first thing is if you have a woman pastor, I highly doubt that you have elders in the church. Right. Because ideally, if you need to remove a pastor, it would go through the elders. And mm-hmm. the elders would make the decision. They would confront the pastor and so on and so forth. So, but if you have a female pastor, you already have an unbiblical church. I highly doubt you have biblical elders who are going to be able to do that. So what do you do? Well, you would confront the person, right, with the truth of the scriptures. If they refused, well, then you leave the church and you go find a biblical church.
Yeah. Well, actually, so when we got to the Q&A, here's the funny thing, and you could probably find the video on YouTube and see it, but the question was worded, you know, if I have a female pastor, what do I do, you know, what do we do as a church with the female pastor, and if she doesn't step down, what should we do? And because we were trying to get, we got a lot of questions, we're getting toward the end, and I was trying to be more rapid fire to get those to answer quickly, and I wanted to give Justin more preference and time to answer. So what we were doing is they'd ask, I would start on one question, then Justin would start, we'd go back and forth. So I was trying to be a little bit quicker as we got toward the end. So they asked that question. My response was really quick. What do you do if a church has a female pastor, and if she doesn't step down, you know, what do we do? My answer was really simple. Fire her, leave the church. And what I didn't realize was there were two tables of women that were pastors in Cebu. And when I said that, they went, like, were you not listening? Justin and I, like, talked about this several times in the conference. This is the Q&A at the end. But yeah, you know.
Yep. You know, there's a couple of really good comments here. Chris Honholtz, if you have a woman pastor, you have neither a pastor nor a church, and he's paraphrasing John MacArthur, which leads into Melissa's comment, if you have a female pastor, you have weak men. Now, John MacArthur has done several sermons on this, talking about if you have women in leadership, and he's walked through scripture, so he points it out in scripture, where women lead, it's because they have weak men who have failed to lead, and the women leading is a judgment on the men.
That is exactly what, you know, it amazes me that people will look at Deborah, and they want to use Deborah as proof that women can be pastors. Read right. Judges. What does Deborah right. say? Deborah herself says to Barak that you asking me to be in this position is a God's judgment on you. She recognized it's God's judgment on him that she would be in that position.
Hold on. Mr. Tracy threw a trump card here. Yeah, but what if your female pastor is an apostle too? I mean, I guess. Yeah.
Then it must be biblical. I love him.
Is she self-appointed? I mean, my hands are tied.
Yeah. Yeah, I did not know. At least I don't remember MacArthur saying, you said here, this one from Chris Honholds here, if you have one pastor, you have neither a pastor nor a church, a paraphrase of MacArthur. When I was asked about it, I got asked, what do I think about a church that has a woman, female pastor? And my response was, you know, that's, you know, it's, she's not a pastor and it's not a church. And someone made a meme of that, put it out there, and everyone said I was quoting MacArthur. If I was, I didn't know it. So, you know.
Basically, here's the way to look at it, right? I heard someone say, they were quoting someone, but they couldn't remember who they were quoting. And they said, I'm probably quoting Spurgeon because Spurgeon said everything smart. And so it's, you know, if we say something, and someone else said it and we don't know it, Well, I mean, well, it's because they're the smart people, and it's just kind of trickling down to all of us at the bottom.
No, I didn't even know. I mean, maybe I did and just didn't realize, but I didn't know MacArthur had said anything like that. So I didn't know I was quoting anybody, to be honest. So I thought I was just giving a quick, snippy answer to, you know, quote Chris Honholtz.
Yeah. And you know, that's the thing. When we look back, we can just look at the lives of John MacArthur and R.C. Sproul, right? Two great men, great theologians, brilliant.
One really good theology, one's corrected now.
Yeah. But between, if you were to take all of their teachings, lectures, sermons, writings, if you were to take all of that up, right, we've probably plagiarized without even knowing it.
Unlike the Harvard president who did an Ed Litton and plagiarized her dissertation.
And did you hear who she plagiarized?
Yes,
she
another black woman.
Another black woman,
which
is a conservative.
Yeah, and that black woman she plagiarized, I heard her talk about the fact that, you know, in academic world, it's a big deal because she's not saying you get accreditation and, you know, or tenure and things like that based on the number of people that cite you. So the fact that she wasn't cited in a source, it's basically theft. And that's why it's theft. And that's why it's such a big deal.
Yeah. You get kicked out of school for those things. You lose your scholarships, you get kicked out, you can't come back. And so now it's like, well, what do you do with this Harvard president who did the very thing that she was also probably kicking other people out for?
By the way, so Melissa says, as a DISPY, I still love R.C. Sproul. Melissa, don't worry, because today R.C. Sproul is dispensational.
You know, Andrew always beats me to that joke. And I know it's coming, and I still can't get there quick enough to beat him to it.
Chris Honholtz says, nobody should ever quote Chris Honholtz. That dude is highly suspect. Just saying. He is suspect because he loves Buddy the Elf. And so with that, before I have just triggered Chris Honholtz. If you want to know if Chris loves Buddy the Elf, all you got to do is ask James White. There we go.
I'm just going to say, Andrew, Chris is going back into a form of law enforcement, okay?
Yeah, he's quit lying to people. Chris, you retired. You can't tase me, bro. You can't tase me anymore. You don't have the taser. You had to turn that in when you retired. All right. Well, with that, I want to thank everyone. This has been a wonderful year. It's been it's been a really hard year personally. Drew, you know some of what I've been going through just health-wise. I've had to really pull back from a lot of ministry this year, something I wasn't comfortable doing, but had to. And I'm starting to get ramped up again, but still trying to keep things, to not overdo it. And so, definitely accept your prayers. I don't accept Mr. Honholtz, who says, yes, but I kept the pepper spray. I have my own pepper spray, sir. By the way, the problem with pepper spray is most people don't know how to use it. If you spray pepper spray at me, I am running toward you as fast as I can, because it brings the whole cloud of dust to you too.
You don't know is Andrew. So he sprays himself, so it has no.
And no effect. And I know something about Chris. I can run faster than him. I will outrun him and bring that to him. And so. So this has been a rough year. It's been a good year. We've had some great opportunities at Striving for Training to minister. The debate that we had that we played here just a few weeks ago, being able to see those students in Texas, that was a great opportunity. We've been to several churches this year, several conferences, and every month but December. We've been somewhere. We've been traveling somewhere. And so, and it's really because of folks like you that help support us, spread the word about what we're doing, asking us to come to your churches. You don't know how much it means to us here at Striving for Eternity. Just to know, I mean, we're just trying to just serve the Lord. We're not going to ever be a big ministry. It's just not the way we're organized and the way we operate. We know that. We know there's a lot far better people, but we appreciate the year and all those that helped us do what we did. And so, as a end of the year, I want to give a big thanks to everyone who supports us, to those who watch and share the show with others. And it's one of the best things you could do to help us is just share these. Text this episode to someone. Text the different podcasts, my Rap Report podcast. Go text it out to folks. And, we talked about Israel. Go listen to the episode I did with Michael Brown on Israel. Very informative, very helpful, really gives a lot of background to what's going on there. Really helped to educate even Christians on what's really going on. And so, just sharing that with others is a huge help. I want to thank Drew, because Drew has filled in. He's, with me being out and having to deal with different issues and travel, Drew has come in with Chris Huff and carried the show for, several weeks when I couldn't be here. So, I just want to thank you, Chris, for doing a great job in my absence. And I look
well. It's Drew, but you can call me Chris, I guess, if you want.
Did I call you Chris? I thought I said Drew. Sorry, Drew. You brought Chris in. See how we talked about this earlier, but yeah.
No, I'm happy to do it. It was it's fun to come on here. It's fun to be a part of the show, and it's fun to interact with everyone, but also talk theology and also be able to minister to some people. And this year we've had the opportunity to minister to a lot of people. And we've got to meet a lot of people. They've come on the show and just had some wonderful arguments and some not so wonderful.
good discussions.
Like a waste of time. But, at the end of the day, the thing is every single person who's come on here, whether they believed or they didn't believe, right, they got the gospel. And and they got to know that we care about them, and that our goal is just to proclaim Christ and elevate Christ and magnify Christ, and we want them to know Christ.
That's right. Yeah, someone I go to church with, he listened to the show that we played the debate, and he's a deacon in the church, and he said to me, pulled me aside and said, I listened to that debate, and I really appreciated how you shared the gospel with Bill. He said, it told me that you're not just doing it and up there for name recognition or popularity, or you cared about where he spends eternity. And I said, yeah. So Chris Honholds here, let's see. Chris says, Andrew is getting absent-minded in his old age. Whatever your name is, thanks. Melissa says it's Drew's show, and Andrew just fills in from time to time. I like that. But on a more serious side, Chris says, all joking aside, grateful for Andrew and SFE's efforts to minister to the body of Christ. Where and if people can help the ministry, they should. Thank you for that, Chris. All joking aside, I appreciate it, Captain America. So, and if folks don't know why Chris Honholds is Captain America, just go look at his Facebook and look at pictures and you'll figure it out. But with that, folks, I just want to wish everybody a wonderful Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Stay safe. We have a very interesting year coming up with an election here in America that is going to be quite interesting. I am sure there's going to be many things to discuss, many questions to be answered, and I will have this year, I'm not sure when yet, but the debate with Michael Brown, that's something else that we'll be asking for support to get to, but these are the things that we're doing to further the kingdom and try to rightly present Christ well here on earth, both in our what we say and how we conduct ourselves. And so with that, I will bid you all a happy new year. So to end the year, we will see you next year. And just remember, what is it, Drew? We gotta, let's see if you...
Strive to make each day an eternal day for the glory of God.
That's pretty close. Strive to make today.
I can't just say what you say. I have to edit it.
Okay. Yeah. You're doing what you accused me of doing earlier. Mixing up some words, adding words. Okay. No. Strive to make today an eternal day for the glory of God. God bless you all. I wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Bye now.
Mm-hmm. Bye.